irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the Dee Dee Jackson Foundation. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. I am TJ Jackson, and with me, I have one brother at the moment, but the other one's coming soon.
The most important one.
The most important, I'm sorry?
The most important brother.
He says the most important brother.
Why is my mic? It seems like it's lower. I'm right on it. Don't mute me. All
right. Is that better?
I guess so. Yeah. Okay.
We have Taj Jackson with us.
Hey, guys.
Taj, you are a funny man.
Thank you.
You're a funny, funny man. Terrell's going to be here any minute. He hit some traffic, but we'll be here very shortly. But if you're listening to us live on the Power of Love Radio Show, thank you for listening. We thank you for joining us. You can tweet us at... You want to say it?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
DDJ Foundation. So it's at DDJ Foundation.
The letters DDJ and then the word foundation. You could tweet us anything. You could share with us any cool quotes you find, any relevant information on our topic, or any relevant information on what the foundation stands for, which is how to navigate through loss and grief, and how to pretty much find inspiration and hope and healing when you're down, when you've come from a place of being low. For the disclaimer, we are not licensed therapists. We're just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it, and we've learned from it. We like to share our opinions, what we've learned, any insights we have. But if you think you need professional help, please don't just rely on us or our radio show or even our foundation, just the foundation. Please seek professional help with a licensed professional. That's the best way to do it. That's the proper way to do it. Do not just rely on us. That was a strong disclaimer I just gave. Right, Taj?
Pretty strong. Yeah.
All right, so Taj, you know how we start the show. We talk about the day or the week.
Do you want to give the call-in too, or you want to do that a little while?
Yeah, let's do a call-in number. The call-in number is 323-203-0815. Again, it's 323-203-0815. Mm-hmm. And I saw Terrell walking in. He seems on like cruise control as he's opening the door. Come on in, Terrell.
Very calm right now.
Very calm, very chill. Wearing a bright red shirt, jacket, smiling with his glasses on. Just say hi, Terrell.
The show just got better.
Oh, you know what? I got to unmute you. Go ahead. Say it again.
I said the show just got better.
All right. Well, Terrell Jackson is here now. But so, Taj, we're going to start with you in terms of your week. Well, how was your week? We'll let Terrell settle in.
My week was good. We saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So that was interesting. I liked it. Definitely liked it. I had lower expectations, but I did enjoy it.
Well, you liked it. You know my problem with... You had lower expectations.
I lowered my expectations because I loved the first one so much.
The first one was great.
And that's the hard thing, you know, when you... It's like, what do you do at that point? But
you know what my problem with it was? What? I didn't feel there was a strong enough...
No, don't give it away. I haven't seen it.
Okay, but I didn't feel like... I'm not giving it away. I didn't feel like there was a strong enough new characters.
But do you really need new characters?
Yes.
You did?
And that kind of a... And the first one was known for its great characters. And I don't want to call it casting because half the characters are what, CGI or all that stuff. Actually, not really. But I just thought the characters in the first one really drove the movie. And I was hoping they'd add a character or two in the new edition.
Okay.
And I was disappointed that there wasn't a strong... No character... You know, the first one has... Pretty much every character is a strong personality. Mm-hmm. A strong person. I didn't feel that this one had it.
Got it.
My opinion. But it was still entertaining. Not as good as the first one.
Yeah.
But still agreed. Fun. Terrell Jackson, how was your week?
Baseball update.
Yeah.
You want the baseball update?
Yeah, you guys winning, losing, what?
Baseball update. We played the Cubs undefeated 13-0 yesterday.
And?
Your little league.
And we were winning 4-1. the first inning, the second inning, the third inning, the fourth inning, the fifth inning.
4-1?
Yeah. Okay. And then the sixth inning, we gave up 8 runs.
Oh,
and
wow.
We ended up losing. So
that's a tough loss.
That's a tough loss, but that's okay. On the other side, you know, with coaches, a lot of people say, I don't know how you do it. I don't like dealing with the parents, this, yeah, that, and the other. And for the first time this year, I don't coach alone. I have some other coaches that help me.
Yeah.
For the first time, we're kind of experiencing that.
Yeah.
And we before the game even started, we had a email that went out to the parents saying that we're going to have a meeting.
Yeah.
A parents meeting.
Yeah.
So we had that last night, and it's been quite interesting. It's been a lot on my mind. The thing is you guys know I love baseball, and I've played it my whole life. I know how to coach, and I know what the kids go through. I know all these things, and there's so many life lessons in it. And a lot of parents just don't understand. A lot, yeah, of parents don't know, you know. But there's an art, there's a method to all the madness, you know. And I think we're getting better.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously we...
Is it based... Do you feel the complaints and stuff are based on losing?
No. Well, the thing is...
It shouldn't be.
So much going on at this level, because this is the level where from the first time they go from coach pitches, where the coach, yeah, pitches to the kids. Now they're going to kid pitch. So now the kids are pitching to, yeah, the other kids. So there's so many things. There's fear. A lot of kids are scared of the other pitchers.
Yeah.
They're scared to get hit by the ball because they don't trust the kid. They trust the coach.
Okay.
So they're scared. So now they're not really hitting the ball as well if they're hitting the ball. So they're not used to little Jimmy or Johnny or whoever who used to hit the ball all the time off the coach. When he gets to the pitcher with a kid, mm-hmm, he's not hitting well. So now he's not performing well.
So
now he doesn't like baseball.
And then
he's down and doesn't really want to play baseball.
So. And also, because he's not hitting, it has to be the coach's fault.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They got to put it
on. Or his attitude's different. He doesn't really enjoy it. I've never heard it before. So all of those things come with it. But you know what? I do love it. I do enjoy it. The funny thing is one of the parents that was a little bit, I think he was the one that was complaining the most.
Yeah.
He was the one kid in my dugout that was crying and really wanted to win, you know?
So he wanted to win.
Mm-hmm. And I don't even think the father knew that his son took it that
serious. Well, I mean, coaching sports is tough, especially, like you said, to start for the parents. You have to deal with the parents. That's the hardest part to me, mm-hmm, about coaching youth sports. But it's incredibly hard in baseball.
Oh, baseball alone is a tough sport.
Coaching baseball, dealing with parents is a nightmare. Difficult.
It is, because there's only so many positions, all of these things.
It's a nightmare.
But the best thing that I love about coaching, it's the lessons in life, you know.
Yeah.
At this level, like, we're not getting paid to do it. You don't win you get a trophy at the end.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter to me. It's just, I know I have an opportunity to teach these kids teamwork. And never giving up. Those are the lessons I try to teach, and that's what's most important.
Interesting.
Most important, I agree. Very good, Joe. All right, well, today, I mean, we're going to skip my week because I really didn't have anything
to add.
It's not important.
It's really, I mean, I don't even remember, to be honest. It's just a blur.
Tennis lessons.
Yeah, but, yeah. Anyway, our guest for today, we have Erica Lauren, who is a longtime friend, not too long, but is over several many years now, I think. And Erica has always been someone we can always rely on, someone who's always looked after us and looked out for us and tried to do good things for her friends. Now, however, it's a pretty cool term.
Erica
had a life-changing moment in the year 2017 and is here with us today to share about her life-changing moment and how she's dealing with it, how she's recovering from it, and how she's growing from it. So, without much further ado, is that said right, Taj?
Yeah. I do? Yeah.
Not I do, but I do. Without any longer wait, we are going to open the mic to Erica. Erica, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys? This is so fun.
It is, right? It's a good time, right?
Yeah.
So, Erica.
Yes.
How are you today?
I'm great.
No longer a Texas resident.
No, I am now a Californian.
That was like a little bond we shared was our love for Texas. Erica was the one person.
I was the last holdout.
Was the last holdout. That, and it's not only just Texas, but the Dallas area.
Yes. I was very close to where you were.
Yeah, I love that. I know that's not this show, but I just have the best memories of my year and a half in Dallas. But anyway.
I'm a happy Californian now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So your first time living in California?
Yes. Ooh. First time living here.
How many months has it been?
It's just like a month. I'm a fresh one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think if you're fresh, people always like it when they're fresh.
Well, it's been a huge adventure. You know, yeah. I just took the two dogs, put them in the car, and drove cross country by myself. So,
by yourself?
I was by myself.
That's like so 26
hours.
How many stops?
I just laid over one night in Tucson.
Good.
Yeah. How long I've did done the that. Dogs drive?
They were actually not as helpful as I was hoping, because I have a dachshund and he had his foot on the pedal, and then my Keyshawn was trying to steer, but I was too nervous.
Okay. So you said by yourself?
Yes, by myself.
Why are you by yourself?
I just recently divorced after 11 years of marriage.
Mm.
And that's been a huge life change.
So there we go. That's our topic for today is how is Erica's a newly divorcee. Is that the right term?
Divorcee, yeah.
Divorcee?
Yeah.
Is it D-I-V-O-R-C-E-E?
Uh-huh. Or very happy. That's also the other term.
But you know what? I haven't talked to you. I think Todd has mentioned this on the air. When we have a guest, I don't like to talk too much about their story before, because I want to be like the listeners, where I don't really know what's going on.
Right.
But I have to say, you seem very bright. You seem not as intelligent. I haven't fooled on that one. I mean, you seem very upbeat.
Yes. I'm actually very happy. This has been a long time coming, several years coming. I knew several years ago that I was not in a situation that was what I really wanted for me. So the last few years have been spent figuring out how to move forward and have the least amount of casualties. I didn't want to hurt him either.
Mm.
It's just realizing that you're not with your person.
When did that happen? When did you realize you weren't with your person?
Probably about 5 years ago. We got married and we had a lot of change in our first year of marriage. We were living in Fort Lauderdale, and he got relocated to Texas, which is why we were in Texas. So in the first year of marriage, we had massive, everything that they say you shouldn't have to go through, moving and marriage and all these massive life stressors. And we moved out here within 9 months of being married, or moved out to Texas within 9 months of being married. So we never really had a chance to kind of settle.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was spent investing in his career. And I gave up my career, which I loved, and left all my friends and my family in Florida and moved for him. And I'd never... Texas was a big adjustment, especially growing up in Miami.
Yeah.
And his whole life became his job. And probably about year three, I started seeing these workaholic tendencies where there was no balance whatsoever. Right. Year five, he fell into a massive depression. We had a suicide attempt.
Wow.
And he just never was the same and never checked back in.
What was your stance at that moment when you felt he was lost and not in a good space? What were you doing as his wife, or what were you doing?
Everything and anything. I found him the right healthcare practitioners. I found him a therapist. I found him a psychiatrist. I found him, I mean, whatever he needed, I was there.
And that didn't really help.
We tried marital counseling. We went, and he just, you have to really want it.
Your own self.
Yes, both of you have to want it. I was carrying this relationship for a very long time. He didn't want to go into some of the dark places that he'd have to go into to heal himself and to be what I needed him to be, because I've always been a big proponent of health, mental health, and therapy, constantly been in therapy. So I was kind of in the graduate school of therapy, and he hadn't even started kindergarten.
Right.
And I kept saying to him, it's super important that we grow together. It's super important that you do this on a spiritual level to get spiritually connected, which he wasn't. Mm. And I hung in there, and I stood by him, and I was not going anywhere. It just, at the end, the lying became just one lie after another to cover up what he wasn't willing to do. It wasn't cheating. It wasn't anything like that. It was just he didn't want to put in the effort. As you know, I don't have to tell you, marriage is a ton of work.
Yeah.
And you both have to be willing to give 100%, and he wasn't even willing to give 30%. I made life pretty easy for him.
Right. So in a sense, you made it so easy that he wasn't really putting any effort into having a strong marriage with you.
Exactly. It became all about his needs and only about his needs. Mm. And then when I would ask for something, because I never did, it was this huge ordeal where he used to say to me, I don't know what to do. I can't do it.
Now, let me ask you, in prior relationships, has that been something you've experienced where you've done more of the caring or trying to?
Yes. I've always been, because I'm super independent and I don't need very much. I tend to not ask for what I need. And that's what I learned from this experience too, is that even if I'm not in crisis, I still have things and emotional needs that need to be met, and I need to make that known.
Beautiful. So that's what you've learned and taken away from this, your marriage.
I've learned 11 years too, right? Yeah, 11 years. We were together 13. Wow. I did a lot of soul searching and figured out, because marriage is a two-party.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just one person. So I had to take my ownership in it, and what did I do? And I tend to put myself second and just be independent as to not be a bother or to impose.
Mm-hmm.
And that became more of an imposition than not imposing.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned I needed to be much more open and honest about what I needed. And without that, you can't ask somebody to know what you need if you don't tell them what you need.
Do you think you're doing... Because you seem upbeat. You seem like you're in a good place.
I'm in a great place.
Do you think that's in relation... Do you think it's tied to the fact that you now are... I don't want to say... Yeah, I guess putting yourself first?
I think that's a big part of it. I think also when you walk away from a relationship knowing 100% that you did everything in your power to try to make it work, and you find resolve in knowing that it just... He wasn't a bad person. He just wasn't my person.
Yeah.
And I feel so proud of myself that I was able to love myself enough to say, and to love him enough to say, listen, neither of us are going to get what we want out of this.
Did you have those thoughts before getting married to him?
When I got married, it was a very interesting time in my life because I had come out of a highly abusive relationship, and I didn't do enough therapy and work on myself before I made a commitment this big to know really who I was and what I wanted. I think that I made some of the decisions in numbness, to be honest. He was a safe person. He was everything that I didn't have before. And so some of those decisions were based on fear. Some of those decisions were based on not knowing who I was and what I wanted. And some of those decisions were based on pressures that people put on you because I was starting to get older and they start with the biological clock and we ended up not having children anyway. So then you look back and say, well, if I knew then what I knew now, would I have made that same decision? Wow. I don't regret anything because I'm now the person I am because of what I've gone through. The only thing that I would have done is I probably would have been more honest and given him the option to say, this is how I really feel. Is this what you still want to sign on for? If that makes sense.
When would you have done that? Earlier?
When we got married. Because there were certain things that I didn't feel for him that I thought would come with time.
Okay.
And they didn't. And so I think, in all honesty, I could have been more open and telling him what the expectations that I had that maybe I didn't, because I didn't want to upset the apple cart.
What do you guys have any questions?
Yeah, when you say abusive, are you talking physical or are you talking like more mental and verbal abuse? Like
all of the above. It was a 5-year relationship that my husband or my ex-husband. No, it was a previous relationship and I just didn't heal the way I should have. I didn't give myself the time to process everything and to really kind of own that space. I think sometimes we go from one, and there was several years in between, but I do think that there's times that we just let things go and we don't really deal with it. And we shove it down, but guess what? It always comes back. It always comes back. So you have to deal with it now or deal with it later, but you will end up dealing with it somehow.
And the advantage of dealing with it now is you get to kind of reclaim and grow as a person, reclaim your life and grow as a person, and you become a better person sooner.
Absolutely.
And a more informed person, I think is a good term. A more informed person.
You're more
at
whole
a younger
person.
Age. Yeah, more whole.
I mean, I have to say that I am happier now because I can stand on my own, and I'm incredibly happy with the person I am. I like who I am, and that makes everything. So anybody that comes into my life at this point is there because they're there to compliment me, not complete me. And that's a big piece
of
it.
Were
No, I was going to say, because I know your journey, and but the listeners listening now would be like, oh, well, she seems so happy. You know, there was a journey, and there are a lot of dark spots in that journey.
Absolutely.
You want to, like, not talk about, but just overcoming that, because if I was listening now, I'd be like, oh, well, she just got divorced, and she's all happy, and all this stuff.
Right, it's a good experience.
Know, yeah, but that year leading up to that decision, you know, was a hard year for you.
I think I told my ex-husband this, that the only thing harder in my mind than making the decision to end a marriage is to take somebody off life support, because that's really what you're doing. And one person always has to be that person that ends it. And leading up to it, there was so much soul searching, and there was, as Taj knows, because he talked me through a lot of it, there were many nights that it was just crying, because I didn't want to hurt anybody else, but I knew that I needed to be honest, and I knew I wasn't happy, and if I'm not happy, then there was no way he could have been happy. And it took me about 6 months to build up the courage to say to him, this is not working.
What in those 6 months, what was it in particular that helped you get that courage? Was it a specific Oprah episode? Was it
no, Oprah didn't have anything to do with this one, although I'm sure she would have something to say to help. It was actually one of the dumbest fights we ever had, but it was enough to push me over the edge that I'd had enough. They always say that couples fight about money, and that's kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And I was traveling for business to Las Vegas, and my bank card had, something had happened, it didn't work, and I asked him if he could get me $200. And I remember him looking at me and saying, why do you need $200? And I said, well, I'm traveling tomorrow, and you haven't gotten me a replacement bank card. Because he said he would, which I should have now taken care of it myself. But I said, you know, I'm leaving. Can you just get 200 cash? And he looked at me and said, I just don't give money to people. And I said, people? Like, what? People?
Wait, so, like, this is after 11 or
11. We had been married 10 years at that point. And I looked at him, I said, people? I'm your wife. What do you mean? And then he said, well, I work very hard for my money, like implying that I didn't. And I just looked at him, I said, who are you? And and I realized that it was such a control thing for him. And I said, you know what? I don't want your money. Keep it. I'll just go to the bank tomorrow. And he said, no, I'll take care of it. It was almost became like he was trying to impose his control like a parent child.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Did you feel like that personality in him? Did you see any other episodes prior?
Yes. It was getting progressively worse. Okay. And because I told you nothing's off limits.
Yeah.
He also, alcohol consumption got greatly increased. Mm. And as he fell into depression, he became more withdrawn and more withdrawn. And I kept trying to throw him lifelines. I kept trying to save him and bring him back. And he wasn't willing. And it's interesting, because when I finally got the courage to tell him, it was a very interesting conversation. He got really defiant and very defensive, and it became all my fault. And I said to him, I'm not here to place blame. I'm just telling you, I just don't think it's going to work. And he said, well, I'm going to go do, at that point when I said it was done, he was willing to do anything, go to therapy. He was, and I said, I'll give you a month to kind of show me what you're going to do. I figured I would give that to him and see if he really was serious. And it took him like a month and I think a month and change to get an appointment with a therapist. But he was doing it for all the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. He wasn't doing it for himself. Mm-hmm. He was doing it for me, to save the lifestyle that he had with me. It wasn't even me that he was trying to save. It was the idea of marriage. It was the fact that he was more worried about being a failure in the marriage than being happy in the marriage.
Right.
So, you know, when people say, well, what did it for you? It was that, and it was consistent lying that kept happening over stupid things. Mm-hmm. Things that he knew I would know. It, like I said, it wasn't any cheating or infidelity. It was lying about, he missed a doctor's appointment and lying about it. Yeah. And saying that he took care of something and he never did. So when you do that over and over, it breaks down and it chisels away at the trust.
What would you tell yourself 10 years ago?
Wow.
Now remember, 10 years ago, you're 1 year married.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
So you're already married. What would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself to not allow things to go on when I first would see behaviors. I let too many things pass.
Did you let it pass because you were newlywed and now you felt like there was no way out?
No, I never felt trapped. It was more of no one's perfect and I can accept flaws and I'm not going to, you know, my mom used to always say to me, pick your battles. Mm-hmm. But what I would wait till it was a war, not a battle. Mm-hmm. And I would always feel like, you know, I think women get afraid that we're labeled as nags because things bother us. And sometimes we let things go mm-hmm. that because let's be honest, there are major thinking differentials between men and women. And things don't bother us that bother you and things that bother you don't bother us. So I think that I would have been more vocal.
Okay.
And instead of being like more accusatory, like I know you're lying about this, I probably would have said, find out why. And I think I kind of knew why he was always more worried about the public perception of him rather he was a very different
circle.
Yes. He was more worried about what people thought of him rather than what he thought of himself and what I thought about him. It was everybody else's opinion was more important. So it was kind of that. And there was the other thing I would have told myself is don't marry somebody that you are not spiritually equal with, that you don't have the same spiritual perceptions.
Can you elaborate?
And it wasn't a religious thing. We did come from different religious backgrounds, but spirituality is a huge thing for me. And it wasn't for him. And he used to pride himself on the fact that he was a science-based thinker and he was an atheist. And, you know, at first I didn't think it was that big of a deal. But as you go through life and you grow and you start going through a lot of the hard times in life, spirituality is really what you fall back on and how you perceive your position in the universe and in the world. And if somebody is looking at, I'm the type of person that I look at the world and I say, okay, how am I impacting the world? He was the type that would look and say, how is the world impacting me? And I was an internal processor and putting out what I wanted back. He was taking everything in and not giving anything back. That's a huge difference.
Right. I think you make an awesome point about making sure you're connecting. If you're going to go long term with someone, making sure you're connected spiritually. Whatever that is.
Whatever it is.
Whatever it is, I do think if you're on completely opposite sides, life's going to throw curveballs at you and you're going to be dealing with situations that are going to really expose that difference and cause issues.
And it is an issue.
Yeah.
Because I would always rely on my spirituality and he would minimize it.
Yeah.
And he would try to logic his way out of it when I would be reaching for spirituality. He would try to sell me on his perception.
Yeah.
And it just drove us further apart rather than closer.
I didn't ask you. You're okay with phone calls, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we've had some phone calls coming in, but I haven't answered them.
Oh.
But they're going to be coming in. And
open
here's
book.
One. Here's one. All right, who do we have on the phone with us?
Hello, CJ. This is April.
How are you, April?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty good today. It's a nice. Actually, I like these kind of days.
People say nice. We're looking at a gray sky.
We're looking out the window.
It's gloomy.
And it's gloomy, but I actually enjoy it. I really do. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I think it's a beautiful day here in Southern California. What do you got for us, April?
I want to talk concerning, you know, since you were talking on divorce, me being a divorcer myself, I have been divorced going on almost 10 years. Next year will be 10 years. And the thing is, I can relate so much to Erica, you know, what she was saying, because the only difference is I end up having to divorce my husband because he had an alcohol abuse problem. And I feel like I've done everything possible, you know, to try to keep our relationship together. When I was with him, I went to rehab with him. I went to counseling with him. I did pretty much everything I felt the need to do, you know, trying to save my marriage. But it just got to the point where, you know, it was no more, you know, not able to be saved anymore, because it was beginning to, you know, cause me to have health problems where I had got really depressed to the point where I had to start taking medicine. The doctor had put me on depression medicine. I had been on muscle relaxers, everything. I had lost weight. It just got to the point where I said, it's either me or him. So I had to choose myself, because he just had got to the point where he just did not want to change. Nothing changed at all. I even tried staying for the kids' sake. but it got to the point where I couldn't do it, you know, that, even that anymore. It just wasn't working. So I just feel like I've done everything, you know, I possibly could do to try to save it. But, you know, you always have that thought in your mind that you have done something, you know, more mm-hmm. to save the relationship. But, you know, honestly, I feel good about it now because, you know, it has brought me to be a stronger person, even though I still kind of feel like in my mind, you know, maybe I should have tried something else. But I know it had to be two people. It couldn't work with just one person, you know, working. It had to be him helping work the relationship out, but it just wasn't, you know, that way.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, I just wanted to, you know, call in and say that much because I know exactly, well, I won't say I know exactly what, you know, Erica went through, but I know it's related to my story as well, what I went through.
And I think you made such a good point in that I think a lot of times as women, I can speak at least from my experience, we do take that burden of always thinking, was there one more thing I could have done? Was there something I could have done differently? And the truth is that he had as much responsibility in it as you did. And you can only do your part and you can only clean your side of the street because the other person has to do their part. So I commend you it takes a lot of courage to walk away and to put yourself first and your kids first and just know that was exactly what the best thing for you at that moment. So I think that was a great choice for you.
And I'm going to add, not only was it the best thing for you, it was probably the best thing for your family as a whole because I think all kids need a happy set of parents. You know, if you're miserable and your husband at the time is miserable, the kids feel that. They sense that. And I'm never going to, you know, try to promote people to get divorced quickly. I think the way you two have done it is the proper way. I think you got to try everything you possible. But if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And I think, you know, I've seen a lot of people who've gotten divorced that have ended up becoming friends down the road when they eventually find their one, you know. And I just think you got to be a strong person for yourself before you could be a strong person for another person. But April, thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you for sharing the story.
April, and
welcome.
And take care of yourself, okay?
Bye, April.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Love you guys.
Love you too, April.
I do want to say one thing that you know, kids model what they see.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned earlier asking me if I was always kind of the one in the relationship that cared more. That's what I was modeled. That's what I saw.
Yeah.
My mom was always the one that did that. And that was another thing that I really took a lot of time studying during this is my family dynamics and what role I've played the entire time and what role did I want to play in the future.
Because the one thing I would say about you knowing you, Erica, for several years, you're a very strong person. You're very independent. You're very... I'll figure it out.
Yes.
You know, you don't rely on others. You'll take on any challenge. And I was going to ask that, but I assumed it must have come from your upbringing or what you saw. Was your mom, you said, was like that?
Yeah, my mom, I've kind of always been fearless with things. I think also going through what I've been through and going through an abusive relationship, but I know there's a lot of people out there that can relate to this. When you come through something like that, you kind of step into a power that you didn't know you had. And you realize that you do have, I think the most empowering moment of my entire life was the first time that I told him no more.
Mm.
That changed everything for me. When I finally said, enough, you're not doing this anymore, it was like I never thought I had the ability to say that. And then when it came out of my mouth, it hasn't stopped.
When did you first say that?
That was when I was finishing off that relationship that started in college and it finished after college. Mm. And I won't give away how many years ago that was. but that was the one, you know how you have those moments in life that you, I know you guys know this, that they change everything, your path in the future. And it's over something, it was over a two-letter word, it was over no. I mean, my whole world changed after I knew I could say no.
Yeah.
And I think that I didn't heal other parts of me, but I was able to know that I could rely on myself. And if I did get in a situation, I do remember thinking about marriage at one point, is that, well, if I hate it, I can get out of it. I do know I have the ability to get out of it. And that's why I never felt trapped. Did you ask me, you know, did I feel like it was because I had no way out? No, I never felt trapped after that first time I said no. to the abusive ex-boyfriend.
One of my favorite quotes from Relationship Aspects is, I don't know who says it, so don't ask me. I just remember this.
Why do you have quotes but you don't know?
Because quotes are like words. They're like a sentence. I can remember a sentence. I can't remember a string of sentences, but I can remember a sentence. But it's, be with someone who brings out the best in you, not the stress in you.
That is so true. And I have a 60-40 rule, by the way.
A what?
60-40 rule.
Let's hear it.
In relationships. So if you're happy 60% of the time, then you can deal with the 40% that you're not. As long as the ratio is higher than equal or lesser than, then it's worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically, if you're married, you probably start at 95-5. And then you gradually go down.
You go down. If you go under 60, that's when you've got to start looking and say, is this worth fighting for?
Is this worth fighting for?
That's at least my rule, and it's worked.
Where did you hear about this rule?
My grandmother, she was married 66 years, and she had two rules. She had the 60-40 rule, and then she had the rule that there's always somebody in the relationships are never 50-50 or 100-100. They're 100-0, because one person is always giving more than the other. And if those days that you can be the person that gives, you're happy, you can deal. And if you're the person that gives nothing, as long as that balance keeps shifting back and forth,
nice,
then it's safe. But don't ever think marriage is going to be 50-50.
I like it.
And I was 100-0 for a long time.
Yeah.
And then
you were the zero.
I was giving 100. And that's when I finally was like, this is not going to change. And when you give somebody every opportunity, the other thing that I think is important, I've had so many people ask me, you know, I know marriage, divorce is hard. It's a failure. I've never seen my divorce as a failure. It was a success because we got married and we had 11 years together. It didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, but what I gained from it, a failure is when you put something in, you get absolutely nothing out of it. That's not the situation.
Well, you're a big country music fan.
I am.
Yeah, you're going to ride with it, I thought.
Okay, but you did. I am.
And I know how much you love Trisha Yearwood.
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay, good. See? I do my research. Anyway, she had a great quote that I looked up.
Okay.
This one I did look up.
Okay.
Divorce is so common and accepted in America that beating myself up over it may sound ridiculous, but I was raised to believe that divorce wasn't an option. To me, divorce equaled failure. I wasn't able to change that equation until I found myself in the right relationship.
That's so true.
Because I don't want people to think we're here promoting divorce.
Absolutely not.
But divorce is an option, and it may be the right option for certain people.
Yes.
And if you're miserable in life and there is no fix, you have to do something about it, in my opinion.
Well, no, you're right. And it goes back to that, only be with somebody that can bring the best of you out.
Yeah.
If both of you are miserable, neither of you are going to be contributing your best and showing your best.
Correct.
Divorce, it should be the last option. And I think that I didn't go into my marriage lightly. I went into it with, you know, 100%, this is life. And I would have stayed. The reason I left is I had non-negotiables before getting in this relationship. And I think everybody needs to determine what their non-negotiables are. For me, it was honesty. And people say that, oh, well, it's being honest. But we all have, no one's 100% honest all the time, right? It's what you can... what you can tolerate. Mm-hmm. When he started lying about things that absolutely didn't matter over and over again, and we had addressed it and it just didn't stop, that was a non-negotiable for me.
I understand.
And so I think if knowing, that's part of knowing who I am now. I now know what my non-negotiables are moving forward.
Yeah.
And that's a huge piece of being a great partner, because it's not just about what I received from this marriage. I was a great partner, and yeah. I'm not saying that lightly. I mean, I really did all of the work, and I was so self-aware of my part in this. So, I mean, I'm not perfect by any means, and he is not the villain in this.
Yeah.
It just is, it's interesting to go back and study dynamics and how things could have been different, I should say.
I have a question.
Sure.
Because you mentioned it in April, the caller mentioned it. Alcohol.
Yes.
With marriage, obviously there's loyalty and support and being there to the end. At what point does it flip a little bit? I don't know if flip is the right word, but at what point do you realize I can't stay in this anymore. Or I can't, because there's got to be a thing where it's like, I'm loyal, I have to be with him, I'm married, you know, got to go all the way.
Like, but what's the tipping point?
Yeah, at some point, there's got to be the, okay, this isn't going to work.
I think for me, I can't speak for everybody, I can only speak for me, but for me, it was when I had gone through and done everything I knew how to do, and everything that, all of my experience with therapists, and we had gone through all of that, and I was still not getting anything back from him. You know, I was like, if you just give me a little bit, I'll be there. But when somebody keeps shutting you down time and time and time again, and you realize it's because they don't want to show up, I realized there's just nothing I could do. And the alcohol does play a part. He was a casual, I mean, he wasn't an alcoholic per se, but he started to use alcohol as a crutch. And when somebody's using something as a crutch, that takes them off the table for availability for you. And I did bring it up to him. We did talk about it. And it wasn't until just a couple weeks ago that he admitted that it was an issue. So I think, to answer your question, everybody's tipping point is a little bit different. But it was a combination. It was like a firestorm of like four different things that happened at the same time. It was a couple lies that I found out about. It was the money situation. It was hiding alcohol, you know, bottles of alcohol from me. It was just this whole thing. And it just built up. And I had run out of options, of ideas, and I had definitely sought out the help. So I think there comes that tipping point where you say, okay, it's him or me.
Right.
Or it's okay. Your partner or you. The only thing I can say is, you know it when it happens.
Right.
You know, you're in until you're not, at least for me.
Yeah.
I have a question. Yeah. 'Cause people see you and they're like, oh, strong, independent.
Yes.
And that's a hard thing, because at the same time, when you need people, people don't assume you need them.
Correct.
And that's the just, because we've had some callers call in the past and said, I've had to be the strong one or this or that for something. But then they don't get the, I don't want to say the love back, but they don't, they everyone thinks they have it under control because they're the strong ones or they're the problem solvers. Did you find that difficult with you in terms of while you're going through this, like, you know, everyone just assumed that you had it under control?
Yes. It's an interesting point, because I am one of those people that usually has it under control. And when I did finally become vulnerable, which is the key word, is vulnerable, you have to be willing to let people be there for you. People didn't really know what to do with me, because when I'm sitting there crying, and it was, you know, weeks and weeks of me sitting in the house just crying, and people didn't really know how to support me, because I never asked for help. And that's what I also learned in my marriage, is he didn't know how to help me either. So being vulnerable and not being afraid of the fear, you have to just know that when you jump, your wings will sprout and you will fly, because you'll be caught. But it is important to honor whatever feelings come up during this process. And it's ugly, I'm not going to lie. Divorce is ugly. And we didn't have children involved.
Yeah.
But even, and I say that a divorce with no children is the best circumstance that you can have if you have to go through a divorce.
Agreed.
But even not having children, it was ugly and it was painful and it was raw. And I just knew that I was capable of more than what I was doing. You have to love yourself and want more for yourself than you want for that other person.
Right.
And you have to realize that until you are whole, you can't be the best partner.
Right.
You know,
right.
And when you stop, when the fear becomes just, you'll accept whatever comes, that's when change happens.
And I think people, I think it's a pretty deep, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it, but I think it's a pretty serious, I think when you say something like you have to love yourself more than you love the other person, people don't really get that. They think that's kind of a selfish thing to say. But it's, if you just take a step back and realize that by loving yourself more than anyone, you could provide the best person of yourself to that person. You could be the best person possible for that person and your family.
You can be whole. You can give up. Yes.
You could be 100% yourself and give 100% of yourself, instead of, if you're just giving, you may be a shell of yourself and therefore not really giving anything of significance.
And what's interesting about that too is, I think that all the people that are all giving and the people that are all taking, you end up resenting each other in the end. The takers end up resenting when the givers stop giving, and the givers resent the takers for never giving.
Yeah.
But it's this pattern that you set up. And when I say you have to love yourself more, that means that you are totally comfortable with standing on your own, and you don't need that person to complete you. Or, you know, I hear so many people say, oh, he's like my oxygen, or she's like my oxygen, I can't breathe without her. Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because when you can stand on your own, you are so sure in where you're going and what you're doing. And think about it. It's just like you were talking about coaching. When you have a strong coach, the team works. When you have a coach that doesn't know what they're teaching the kids, you have melee.
Yeah.
And that's very much the same with people in relationships. Is when you have a strong leader in yourself, you know where you're going. Your partner knows where you're going.
Well, talking about strong leaders, I think Anthony Robbins is a great strong leader.
He looked at me. I was like, oh, next to you.
Tosh is the strongest leader.
But no, really, Anthony Robbins is an author, a motivation speaker, someone who I consider a leader, right?
Yes.
Actually, he's the guy who got me into reading. Well, my uncle got me into reading, but it was his book that drove my love of reading. And he has a really cool quote that I think will kind of shock people. Maybe not. But he said, initiating, first of all, the reason why it's going to shock is because I don't think people would think he was a divorcee.
That's right, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he got a divorce, and he had a big family.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, initiating and going through a divorce with four kids can be a brutal experience, but also a tempering one. It gave me perspective and insight to be able to find the love of my life, which I think is really cool because I'm not, like I said, especially with kids involved, I'm not the one who's going to always promote divorce, but I don't believe people should just slowly die within themselves because they feel that there's no way out.
We promote happiness.
You got to promote happiness. Yourself. And I think we keep saying this because it's important to know. I don't want any of our listeners to say, I knew I wasn't happy and just file divorce within an hour.
No, it's a big, you know? big decision.
Three teeth told me divorce.
Right.
No, but I think you have to, like you've done and like April did, those are the two, you know, examples we have today so far. You guys tried a lot. You know, you've tried a lot of different ways to make it work. You were committed to the marriage. You're committed to making it work. It just couldn't work.
No.
And I think, you know, it is sadly the right thing at that point to separate.
And I think that is why I'm so happy, because I have peace.
Well, it's still early. No, I'm just playing.
Well, we've been separated for many months. You know, the other thing that I will tell people, there's two things that I learned. Number one, loving somebody is easy. Liking somebody is hard.
Okay.
So if you can like them, the love follows.
Seems backwards, but it does make sense.
It does seem backwards. The other thing is, don't involve a lot of people in your choice. Don't bring a lot of people's opinions into your problems. I think everybody has an opinion and everybody brings their own baggage to it. A lot of people did not know, like you guys did not know until it was done, because that was no one's decision but my own. And I'm the only one that will have to live with the repercussions of that decision. Because what I found is everybody had an opinion.
Right.
Everybody had an opinion. And they didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, because what I always try and promote when friends call me is having them talk and having them kind of explain to me, because what I don't want to do as a friend is tell them what to do, because I'm not in their shoes at all, you know, and I don't know the whole story. And so for me, it's just getting them to make the decision that they already knew they should make. It's just, you know, being that ear to listen.
Mm-hmm.
I
think sometimes, like you said, Taj, if you're the ear to listen, they could say it and hear themselves
say it.
They'll
come to that conclusion.
And they'll come to the conclusion they want to come to by just vocalizing what they're thinking.
But too many people think, oh, I should tell them this or I should tell them that, and they're not in that.
I think that's
today.
A strong advice, Erica, is don't include so many people, because you'll hear all these different scenarios or reasoning or things that can change how you feel and how you think.
Mm-hmm.
And we're out of time. I don't know where the
time is. Out of town.
Quick question.
Quick question.
What is the biggest change now for you?
I'm at peace. I'm happy, and I'm comfortable in my own skin, and I'm not afraid of not having everything figured out. I think sometimes we get so controlling and we have to know where we're going. And what I've learned is sometimes the journey is just as peaceful as the destination.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what I've learned.
That's great.
Yeah.
Taj, anything else?
No.
Erica, one, I know you just pretty much summed up the final thing, but is there anything else you want to share? I know you have your website that's being developed as of now. Do you not want to say what it is?
Not yet.
All right.
But I'll come back on and we'll talk about that because
okay.
It's a result of everything I've gone through. But my one advice to people is just stand in your truth.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do anything with the intention of harming anybody. Live to be the best way and the best version of yourself. And sometimes that works the way you've set up the constructs and sometimes it doesn't. But if you live authentically and truthfully, you can never go wrong.
Never go wrong. I love it. I love it. Who wants to go wrong?
I'm so all glad right. I was here with you guys. Thank you.
It was fun, right?
Having me. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Were you nervous?
No.
Good.
No.
Yeah, you didn't look
with
nervous.
With you guys? No.
Yeah, you didn't look nervous. You seemed ready. But that's all the time we have. If you are just discovering our show and want to learn more about our foundation, make sure you go to www.ddjf.org. I kind of messed that up. It's www.ddjf.org.
Well, I don't have anything.
No, that's all thumbs up.
I was giving you a thumbs up. Okay. Good job.
All right.
He's just being supportive.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much again, Erica,
thank
for sharing
you.
Your story. I know it's not the easiest thing to do, although it didn't look so tough for you. But we truly appreciate it, and I know mm-hmm. our listeners do, so thank you. That's it. If you want to contribute...
Yeah.
Should we go
support.
There?
Yeah.
If you want to support and contribute our show, please text the letters DDJF to the number. Okay. Wait.
That was Taj.
Yeah. So what did I do wrong?
Text, no, you did it right this time. Did it right this time.
Text the four letters of DDJF.
To the number.
You text it to the number 41444. 41444. And then it will set you up with some type of cool and easy and interactive donation page. It could be $1, it could be $2, it could be $5.
It could be $1,000,000.
It could be $1,000,000. But and just know whatever you're donating is going to programs like the show, programs like our Music Heals and Music Therapy programs, and many more that we have planned for the upcoming year. So we want to thank all of our listeners. We want to thank you, Erica, for being
thanks
with
you
us.
Guys.
And have a blessed and wonderful
same time
rest
next
of
week.
Your week. And yes. we'll be back next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Adios.
Hasta.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.